Hello and welcome to another episode of Now and Ben,
where our super sub Ben Bailey-Smith collars the big stars we just couldn't miss while they're in town and gets the lowdown on their latest projects.
In today's episode, it's British big and small screen favourite Benedict Cumberbatch.
Double Ben.
That's right, he's talking about his new drama, The Thing with Feathers, which is out this week.
Plus, director Dylan Southern joins them too. They both chat to Ben about bringing this best-selling novel to the screen, the on-set silliness behind a very serious performance, and acting alongside a giant crow.
Yes, enjoy, and keep an eye out for more episodes dropping into the Take feed every now and then.
How are you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm all right. Dude, the performance is
phenomenal. Thank you very much.
That genuinely, I'm not just saying that. Like, I was blown away.
Thank you.
And I suppose, you know what it is? You get, me and you the same age. You get to a certain age, and like everything upsets you and makes you cry. So I was like, oh God, you know, have these kids and the weight that your character's bearing. I just thought, I don't know how you did it. Brilliant performance. Let's start Dylan. Like, let's start with you. Like, what bark was it? Was it you reading the book? Was it something that was brought to your attention? Was it Ben?
This started 10 years ago for me. So I was gifted the book by my friend who actually worked at the publishers in 2015. I think it was the week the book came out. He gave it to me not thinking I would want to turn it into a film, just knowing my taste I think you really like this book. And he was right. I read it again, cried my eyes out at the exact same point both times I read it, and just was just blown away by it. Just for such a thin volume, it contains such depth and such truth about this thing that we don't often talk about. And I'd experienced bereavement as a teenager, losing friends, like two friends within the space of a year, and hadn't really dealt with it. I'd done this sort of typical thing of kind of pushing it down, you know, it's still there, but we won't talk about that. And I think Max's book, when I read it, just unlocked that. It was so kind of compassionate, but also unsentimental and you know, vulgar and funny in places and violent and all of these things that made me kind of understand some things about myself better. And I had no idea how you would turn it into a film, but I still somehow managed to track down Max and have a coffee with him and persuade him to option the book to me.
Right, and this is pre the Cillian Murphy.
Yep, before any of that. Yeah.
Everyone was after that option, but right. He got in there first.
For the first couple of years, I was sort of on my own trying to make this film happen, and then gradually people came on board, and it became more and more realistic.
What was the big moment where you like, this is definitely going to happen? Was that Ben coming in, getting involved as an exec, or was that way down the line?
I mean, it was, I think in the film world today, you don't ever know that anything's definitely going to happen. But, you know, when I sent the script to Benedict and he read it and liked it, and that was the moment where I was like, wow, this is really going to happen.
Yeah. I think when I met you, Ben, I'd been watching Eric.
Oh, yeah.
And this feels like almost like the sort of deeper, darker, bigger brother of that scenario. You know, that artist you had in Vincent, and that manifestation, the way he was dealing with loss. This feels like it digs even deeper into that relationship.
And similar in a way. I mean, yeah, it's odd to have a moment of repetition quite so close, but otherwise inevitable in a career, over a lifetime of being an actor. But this is something that belongs to the children as well. And the book's very much skewed to realizing halfway through, or maybe two thirds of the way through, that it is an unreliable narrative perspective from the boys as older men looking back. It's really subtly laid in that, but it kind of, actually it's very near the end, isn't it? Because it flits between boy, crow, dad, and yeah, it's one of the later boy chapters where you realise, hang on, they're writing the past tense suddenly. It's like, but for Dylan and for me, Crow's presence had to be real for all of us. I mean, we did talk about it because of Cillian's extraordinary transformation in Andrew Walsh's adaptation, where he became Crow, rather like Jonathan Pryce's famed Hamlet for Richard Eyre, where he took on the voice of the ghost of his father. You know, it was like a possession. And it was an astonishing thing to watch, too young to have seen Jonathan Pryce, but I did see the play and was blown away by it. But the minute I got the script, first of all, I felt there was so much more space for the sort of dynamism of the book to exist on screen than there was in the play. The boys were obviously incredibly present, and Crow was this manifestation between all three units. Yeah, it was an amazing, peculiar, odd thing. You know, you're talking about how many people were involved in making that singular character, mm-hmm. from Hicks's sculptural Maniquette, I can never say it.
Maquette,
just shorter, Maquette, to Creature Ink Workshop, creating the head and the animatronic, and to Eric Lampard's embodiment of it. He was the operator and actor underneath it all, on stilts as well, ball guy. Really heavy head, he was extraordinary. To David Thewlis voicing it. And I had to sort of see it as a complete thing. But in front of me, it was all of those things with the guy with the remote control, Eric sweating away doing a David Thewlis impression, me getting hit in the face with a rubber claw. And I mean, so I'm happy to imagine it as real.
I really wanted to ask about that. So what were you hearing? You weren't hearing David's performance.
No, it was,
so Eric
it was Eric.
Voicing the lines.
And he was voicing as David, but not as David eventually, because we hadn't secured him by that point. Right. But we'd all imagined it. I mean, anyway, the point is, there was a point where I was like, I think I know what David Thewlis sounds like. We maybe just do without the voice and just do the act. So the whole sort of Feast of the Mau Mau spiraling dance, where he finally gets his kind of voodoo hooks into the character and starts to rip him open, father, the dad character that is, and the crow and him kind of mesh and become one rather than being adversarial. We kind of did the motions of the dance, and Eric was extraordinary, and he brought it out of me as well, and that synergy was extraordinary. And then the rest of it, the kind of piecing together all these separate elements as one thing, was just, it's like acting in front of green screen or blue screen. You have to sort of fabricate a reality and know that it might not be as present. It might just be a shadow in the final edit, or a voice, or silhouette, or full-bodied thing and all its kind of...
I mean, it was so important to me that crow was a real, tangible, touchable thing rather than a CGI confection. Just
a tennis ball on a stick.
Exactly, yeah. It was...
Full for the connection for the audience, let alone the performers, right?
I mean, it's strangely off-putting to you as a performer.
Yeah, that's sort of thing what I'm trying to say, yeah.
A guy on stilts, you know, heavy as the head that wears the crow, I think is the thing. But like, it was a huge animatronic head that, you know, as soon as we
had as many breaks for Eric as we did for the children.
I can imagine.
It was incredibly heavy.
Audiences wouldn't know this, but as soon as I saw his name pop up in the opening credits, I was like, oh my God, perfection. Eric and I used to be a comedy duo in the early 2010s. Yeah, we were called Dry Roasted. And he, you know, he was a French clown. You know, he'd been to French clowning school. His physicality is remarkable. And obviously, shame we don't see his face, because his face is remarkable as well, right? He has a really, really interesting
face. I have videos from early
incredible
rehearsals
mover.
Where he's doing it without the costume and he's still crow. It's incredible.
Almost like a praying mantis. He's got incredible physicality. It's great to see. I wanted to ask you
about... His script was a work of art as well.
Oh, yeah,
he drew beautiful drawings and thank you cards, and he was a very gracious, generous presence.
We worked together, everything we did, he'd have drawings, pictures, scribbles. He's just an amazing brain. The other thing that blew me away was the two kids, the two Boxall boys, because, I don't know, as a parent, whenever I'm around kids, I just feel this huge weight of responsibility. I don't want to scare them. I don't want to say anything untoward. You don't want to do anything inappropriate around a kid. You're just thinking that innocence. I don't want to spoil it. But some of the stuff you have to do with them is like, it's horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, my worst fear with my own children is that they're gonna, you know, develop some of my anxieties or my negativity or my bad habits.
And he's actually told by a psychologist to not hide his grief, to not shy away from showing the chaos, the vulnerability, the emotion, the not coping. Because he thinks he has to try and cope, which of course means he erupts. He erupts in anger. He erupts in, he just sort of shuts off and disassociates and sinks back into something very nearing despair at certain points.
Yeah.
His face changes, as the kids say in their moment. Dad changed after Mum died.
I found that really upsetting.
It's really upsetting.
How did you go about, I guess it was probably on both of you, but just making it comfortable, safe, and explaining to them how horrific this thing is.
Yeah,
a lot of duty of care, and like, we worked with their mum and we worked with, you know, coaches, and just to make sure that they understood that what was happening was pretend, and you know, and they were smart kids. But yeah, I think they brought a lot of levity to the set, you know, because there's 2 7-year-old boys, and they really did get what we were doing, and Benedict was amazing. You know, they'd never been on a set, they'd never acted, so this thing...
They'd never acted?
Never acted, no.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. This thing was overwhelming to them, but they very quickly took it in their stride, and I mean, they were hilarious. I mean, I think we needed some aftercare some days from them, because, like, You know, if they didn't want to do a certain scene, I would have to find a new way to humiliate myself to persuade them. So there's one day they had to put on mum's makeup and they just go, no. And I was like, well, you can do whatever you want to me. And they just wrote poo on my forehead. And I had to direct for the
And they called you weak man.
They gave me that nickname on day one. My debut feature film, I have to command the respect of like a crew of 100. And those two boys just spotted it and they're like, oh, here's weak man. Weak man's here. And that was my nickname. But you know, if it gets a shot, I'll take it.
I had to do similar things. Although, yeah, Richard, it's very transactional with kids at times. And, you know, there's so many roles going on. Just going back to the scythe, exactly the same fear as you do. I'm a father and it's my worst nightmare. A film set can be a very unchild-friendly place. With all the safeguarding and the hours and all that stuff, it's still like, it's not somewhere you'd want to bring kids to, especially when it's this sort of explosive drama of grief and turbulence and emotional chaos. And yet, you know, it became a thing where I was both their friend, their colleague. I mean, the more I talked to them just as another guy in front of the camera, the more it was like, oh, I see, we're all in this together. I thought it was really important to be on a level with them and them to be on a level with me. Like, we're doing this, that's the crew. We all work together, but we're on this side of the camera and we're gonna help each other out. But also to be a dad and just have an overview as a producer, thinking he's tired, he's hungry, he's not gonna do it. I'll have a chat with him later. Let me go and speak to them during tutoring and see if I can sort of smooth the way or play our way into getting something of the lightning in the jar moment that we needed. And it was joy. It made home life incredibly easy as well, which is not often the case. Usually work is the holiday and home life is proper work. This is the other way around for a bit, which is great. Nice. But also, you know, they teach you such humility and they really ruin any kind of self-importance. There was a moment where I had to tell them that their mother had died, and Richard was slightly older, they're twins, and he was born just minutes earlier, but he's got a profoundly old soul look about him. He contains kind of a great storm of volatility, and they're both wonderful children, but he's got this kind of gravity about him, and he walked towards me and just went started laughing in my face. I was like, oh Jesus, I've got it. You know, at the moment I'm telling my children that their mother has passed away, and they're just back from school running with their satchels on the ground going, mum, and I'm going, and it just, he's literally laughing in my face at every take. And another moment when I lost them in the woods, and all the resurgent fear of more loss on top of the compounding the grief of losing my wife, I think I've lost my children, and I shout at them in my rage, as parents do when they think their children are under threat and they think they're going to lose them. You know, don't cross the street like that, you know, that kind of protective rage, that misguided but love, really. It comes out at me, and then I collapse in full realization of what it's really all about, that it's just her. I really miss her, and I'm failing them as a dad. I just collapse, and this beautiful moment the children are magically capable of giving unasked for love and support to an adult. It's one of the most precious of many rare gifts they have. And as he came towards me, he was like, I don't want to hug you. I think this has to be a bit of a moment where there's kind of a huddle, you know? No. And then the take happened and he did it, and he whispered in my ear, but in full earshot to the sniggering crew who could hear it, like, you owe me big time. As I'm crying like an eyes out. I mean, it was remarkable, and also just joyous days as well, joyous days of play. And I adore them. I adore them.
Never not going to be those two, as chaotic and wild as they were.
I was terrified. I was such a wimp. I was like, I'm literally in fear of my safety on set with these. I also, as a producer, I think we're not going to make the day. Dylan was like, no, we have to go with them. They're the rawness. They're the realness.
We did a big group casting with loads of kids, and they would do their exercises individually. And I was looking on my phone this morning. I was looking at the video, and every time some new kids would get up and I was filming them, my camera would just drift back to Henry and Richard watching, and it was just, and any time we could harness who they really were. So there's a scene where they have to, Crow tells them to build a model of their mothers. We put on some music before they were walked onto set, and all of the stuff to the making stuff, and they came in and nobody spoke, we kept it silent, and they just went in and started doing it. And you know, art department I think had made some models, and they were like, we wouldn't make that. Like, you know, we want to make our version.
Really real in that moment.
And that's just them being them. And there are other moments, like when they're playing on the bed and Benedict can't get them to go to, that's just them being like, you know, not listening.
Which is so how real is that? And we all know that moment.
Absolutely recognised it completely. It was an incredibly effective movie. I think it's a beautiful piece of work.
Thank you.
Yeah,
thank you,
it's brilliant. I really enjoyed talking with you guys.
Thank you. Lovely to see you again. Me.